Support for TPR comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' comp provider committed to helping employers get their people home safely. Preventing workplace accidents protects families and keeps businesses productive. More at texasmutual.com.
From Texas Public Radio, this is Texas Matters, a weekly radio news magazine that looks at the issues, events, and people in the Lone Star State. Today on Texas Matters, a trip down the Rio Grande to see the buoy barrier and the people it's supposed to stop. Climate change is making water more precious, so Texans will be paying more at the tap. This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. It's no longer an open question. The buoy barrier that Governor Greg Abbott ordered deployed into the Rio Grande is a hazard. The body of a man who drowned in the Rio Grande was discovered Wednesday near the barrier that Texas deployed as part of Operation Lone Star. The buoys are the new centerpiece of Abbott's effort to prevent migrants from crossing the river and entering Texas. Earlier this week, I got into a kayak and paddled down the Rio Grande to get a close-up look of the buoys and the people Abbott is trying to stop. It's 6 in the morning, and Jesse Fuentes is unloading kayaks next to the Rio Grande. It took him weeks, but Fuentes negotiated with the city of Eagle Pass and the Texas Department of Public Safety to allow him to launch from the closed boat ramp in Shelby Park.
This is an excursion, the way I'm calling it, to see the river. And the beautiful thing about it is that, we're going to take our time. It should be a slow paddle, maybe about an hour and 15 minutes to get down to the buoys. It's about 2.6 miles from here.
He's guiding a fact-finding mission about the humanitarian and environmental impact of Operation Lone Star. It's a flotilla of journalist, activist, and one state lawmaker.
I do serve on the Homeland Security and Public Safety Committee, so I wanted to come out and see the new buoys. There's been a lot of controversy about it. It was something that our committee did not discuss. It was something that the governor decided on his own, as far as I know. And I believe that there are better ways to handle the border. I believe people are coming here out of desperation, and then they're met with razor wire, which is causing a lot of harm.
Vicki Goodwin represents Texas House District 47 in Travis County. The Democrat said she needed to see for herself what Governor Abbott is spending billions of taxpayer dollars on.
I've had tours with DPS before. They tend to show us what they want to show us. And sometimes I find that talking with people that actually live down here is more informative than getting the DPS tour.
Once in the water, the contrast between one side of the river and the other is impossible to miss. The Mexican side has a large park with murals and people enjoying nature. But on the Texas side, there is a wall of steel cargo containers and miles of coiled razor wire. There is also razor wire under the water's surface, a hazard for anyone who might stumble upon it. And there were people stranded in the water, migrants looking for an opening in the razor wire so they could enter Texas. There were families with small children struggling to wade through the murky water, which could be up to one's calves in one step and the next suddenly drop down to chest deep. They said they were mostly from Venezuela, but a few were from Honduras. They'd been traveling for over a month and were exhausted. The 104-degree heat of the day also sapped their energy, but there was no going back. On the Mexican side, the cartels could kidnap them for ransom and kill them if it isn't paid. Farther downriver was the orange buoy barrier. It stretches for 1,000 feet in the middle of the Rio Grande. It's anchored to the shallow water with thick cables and concrete bases. Printed on the side is an admission. It says peligroso, Spanish for danger. The water here is so shallow that swimming under the barrier isn't an option. Climbing over them is ill-advised. There are serrated metal plates between each buoy that could cut anyone making the attempt.
It's frankly a little frustrating to see that something like this is in the middle of our river.
Fuentes knows this river well, and he says the barrier is already altering the flow of the river and piling up sediment. It'll only get worse with passing time, but if the Biden administration has its way, the barrier will soon be gone. The Department of Justice is suing Governor Abbott, demanding that the buoys be pulled out. It calls the barrier a threat to the environment and public safety, and it violates treaties with Mexico. The fact-finding flotilla moves downstream to private property where there's a prearranged break in the razor wire so the kayakers can exit the river. But soon, the migrant families from before also arrive. They, too, want to climb out of the river. But Texas National Guardsmen stop them. Wearing thick leather gloves, they begin to unspool fresh razor wire and hammer fence poles into the ground. The families in the water watch in defeated disbelief. The activists in the group speak up and video record the scene. They convince the guardsmen to let the migrants pass through and step onto Texas soil. An activist led the migrants away from the river to the U.S. Border Patrol, where they were given water, allowed to rest in the shade, before taken away to make their asylum claims. In Eagle Pass, I'm David Martin Davies. Operation Lone Star appears to be wearing out its welcome in Eagle Pass. The border town's city council delivered a setback on Tuesday to Governor Abbott's border control operation. The council reacted to community complaints that the Texas Department of Public Safety has gotten out of control when it took over a local park. Eagle Pass's Shelby Park has become ground zero for Abbott's Operation Lone Star. But last 4th of July, it was the site of the city's Independence Day festival and fireworks show. Just like in other communities across America, bursts of color were exploding in the night sky as God Bless the USA played. But uniquely here, after the celebration, the DPS moved in. They declared the 47-acre public park closed to the public, the baseball and soccer fields, walking trails, and a boat ramp that accesses the Rio Grande were now off limits. Spools of razor wire were stacked on the riverbank, and days later, orange buoy balls were delivered here to be deployed into the International River. The park was now being used exclusively as a base for Operation Lone Star because the mayor of Eagle Pass, Rolando Salinas, had signed an affidavit declaring the park his private property. But on Tuesday night, the people of Eagle Pass made it clear they wanted their park back. They held a protest on the steps of City Hall, objecting to the loss of Shelby Park and also to what many called the cruelty that they witnessed by the DPS to migrants. And those complaints continued inside the city council meeting, where they wanted the council to rescind the affidavit. But some, including Victor Escalon, the DPS South Texas director, told the council without Operation Lone Star in Shelby Park, the city could be overrun with migrants.
If we're not careful, our concern is today it's 1,000, tomorrow it's 4,000, 5,000, so on and so forth, and then we have a crisis here in the community. So we want to avoid that.
Escalon said Eagle Pass is the number one migrant crossing point in Texas and second in the nation after Tucson. Nelson Barnes, who's the director of the Operation Lone Star Prosecution Unit, echoed those concerns to the council.
Would you rather wait to arrest the criminal when he's in your house? Or would you rather get him arrested in the front yard?
By declaring Shelby Park private property, it allows the DPS to arrest the migrants with criminal trespass, and then they're prosecuted by Barnes and his team. But if it's a public park, making that trespassing charge stick becomes complicated, according to Ambrutha Jindal, the chief defender of the Operation Lone Star Indigent Defense.
If it weren't for the signing of this affidavit, we wouldn't see these arrests occurring.
Jindal said since the 4th of July celebration, there have been over 500 migrant arrests in Shelby Park alone. and she took issue with Barnes's metaphor, adding that mass prosecutions isn't a solution to the immigration problem.
He's assuming that individuals who come into the country are going to be committing crimes, crimes on properties, crimes on other individuals. That's not what we're seeing in reality. I mean, what we're seeing from all of the clients that we represent are individuals who are economic migrants, who are looking for a better life for themselves and their families. We're also seeing a lot of asylum seekers, individuals who are escaping atrocious situations in their home countries, looking to America as an opportunity for safety.
After over an hour of public testimony, the council deliberated behind closed doors and returned late into the night to vote unanimously to rescind the affidavit. Mayor Salinas said it became clear to him that DPS was out of control at Shelby Park.
They called me and they asked me, Mayor, do you mind if we install a gate in the bull ramp? I said, yes, I do mind. Don't install that gate. And they installed it.
Salinas did add he thought it was unfair that his community is caught in the middle between Abbott and President Biden in a national political struggle over immigration. He would like Biden to directly get involved.
I think the federal government needs to step in. I think President Biden needs to say something.
It's unknown at this point how Abbott and Operation Lone Star will react to the loss of this critical real estate and if the razor wire and the boat ramp gate will remain. President Biden is proposing increasing spending to strengthen border security. In his proposed 2024 budget, the president would allocate nearly $25 billion to U.S. Customs and Border Protection and Immigration and Customs Enforcement. It's a nearly billion-dollar increase over the previous year. In recent months, Biden has announced new proposals to mitigate and control direct migration to the U.S. border, such as a migrant sponsorship program for people coming from Venezuela, Nicaragua, Haiti, and Cuba. Biden is also calling for a new $5 billion contingency fund to help the Department of Homeland Security respond to surges of immigrants at the U.S.-Mexico border. On top of all that, Texas is spending billions of dollars at the southern border. In the new two-year budget, Operation Lone Star has over $5 billion to spend. All of that is a lot of money sloshing around for an issue that has mixed results. The public radio program Marketplace has been looking at this in a series of reports looking at the economic cost of having an immigration system that everyone can agree needs major reform. Elizabeth Trovall is a reporter for Marketplace and is reporting for the series Barriers to Entry.
Well, I was interested in the way that tech can be used in, you know, various parts of a migrant's journey. So it can be used, you know, in human smuggling. It can, you know, be used to get people to the United States from, you know, all over the world. It can be used to monitor migrants and track where they are once they're in the United States and they have a pending immigration case. And it also can be used to empower migrants, right? And be a tool for legal service nonprofits that want to help immigrants.
So it does make sense that Marketplace should be looking at this issue because it is one of the big political issues of our time. And one reason why people come to the United States as migrants is because of financial reasons.
So absolutely. I would say it's a huge economic story, not just a political one, because people leave their countries, you know, often in part for economic reasons or wholly for economic reasons. And the reason they come to the U.S. is because of the enormous number of jobs and the opportunity that people can find in the United States. So there's a push and a pull here. And, you know, all of us in the United States benefit in one way or another from, you know, immigrant labor, immigrant work happening here.
One of the stories that you report on, though, is there's a lot of labor, but sometimes the migrants who do that labor, they do not get the pay for it. Wage theft can be something that migrants have to be aware of all the time. If they don't have legal status, then they can become victims in this area. What did you find?
Yeah, I mean, and it's really anybody. Any of us can you know, our employers steal from all sorts of workers. But of course, for undocumented immigrants, it can be an even dicier situation. It can be harder to know what your rights are, to navigate the legal system if you are only a Spanish speaker or you're not an English speaker. It can be expensive to find an attorney and try to get your money back. And so, you know, what I found is there's actually a new platform that's helping immigrants recover stolen wages, and it's actually kind of like a TurboTax that allows advocates to kind of help a worker file one of these claims, and you don't need to be a lawyer or anything. And so it's kind of this interesting way that technology is actually being used to help immigrants, whereas in other cases I've found, you know, technology to play a different role, let's say.
So in a migrant's journey, say from like Venezuela to Texas, there's a lot of communication going on along the way, and there are apps and other, you know, that's the main way that people communicate electronically through these apps. And is that working for them? What did you find?
So WhatsApp is kind of the place where communication is happening across borders. And, you know, it's really popular, not just among migrants, obviously, but all over the world, people are using WhatsApp to communicate. You know, you can just use an internet connection. You don't need, you know, to talk to people in other parts of the world. And so if you're a migrant who's crossing borders, you know, you're not going to spring for an international phone plan every country you're in to talk to people either ahead of you in the journey, to talk to the smuggler, to talk to family back home. Like, you're going to use WhatsApp. And that also is why it's such an important tool for human smugglers to use to basically coordinate communication. You know, it really, WhatsApp has streamlined kind of corporate communication for human smugglers who, you know, including people obviously working for cartels or at least kind of paying money to cartels to, you know, smuggle migrants.
And the migrants, they become tagged almost as if they were a product as they move through this system. And they track them like they would track inventory.
This is a billion dollar industry. You know, there are VIP packages that go for $20,000 to get somebody from one part of the world to the United States, right? I mean, there's like a lot of money to be made here. And, you know, each criminal group that operates a certain territory along the way is going to be profiting off of every single person walking through their territory. They're going to, you know, make sure that they're getting money from that movement of people, people who, again, are in quite, you know, often very desperate situations.
There's money on the other side, as well as the United States government is contracting to monitor migrants who have come into the system. And is, how much money are we talking about there?
The GEO Group, it's the second largest private prison company in the country. They have a $2.2 billion contract with ICE right now to handle the agency's electronic monitoring hundreds of thousands of migrants. This can be an ankle monitor. It's increasingly like a phone app that kind of tracks where people are moving from day to day. And yeah, it represents for Geo Group. I mean, this is a huge revenue stream for them. It's in 1 year, it jumped from, I think, 12% to 20% of their revenue, which is it's big, especially as, you know, private prisons have fallen out of favor, you know, under the Biden administration, and it's become overall the industry is in the decline.
Elizabeth Trovall is a reporter for Marketplace and is reporting for their series Barriers to Entry. The percentage of people without health insurance in Dallas County is larger than in other counties in Texas. It's also the largest among the four big DFW counties. So why is that? KERA's Brett Jaspers went looking for answers.
Now departing from Terminal D87.
Lashundra Randall works at DFW Airport for an American Airlines subcontractor.
The company that I work for, they offer the insurance. The only thing is, it's expensive. You can't get that insurance, especially how much we make an hour.
Randall makes $14 an hour. She gets very low-cost care at Parkland, and she definitely needs it to stay healthy.
I have sickle cell anemia, and I have to get a lot of blood transfusions. If I don't get a blood transfusion, that can be bad for me.
But she says she waits several hours at Parkland to get the transfusions. Having insurance, she said, would shorten her wait and allow her to see a doctor of her choice. Randall is one of over 500,000 residents of Dallas County who are uninsured. Texas is well known for having the highest uninsured rate in the country, but why is Dallas leading the pack among its peers?
There's not going to be a slam dunk answer to that.
Ann Dunkelberg is a senior fellow at the left-leaning policy group Every Texan. She said one potential explanation is Dallas County's lower median income compared to Tarrant, Collin, and Denton counties, as well as its higher rate of poverty.
Income is the single most potent predictor of whether somebody's going to be uninsured in the United States.
And a common misconception, Dunkelberg said, is that Medicaid is an option for poor working adults.
We have a much more generous Medicaid for children than we do for parents. And then if you don't have any dependent children, then there is no way for you to get Medicaid in Texas unless you're fully disabled or over 65 and in poverty.
Another potential reason why Dallas County's uninsured rate is higher, a relatively younger population than peer counties Tarrant and Bear. Stephen Love is head of the Dallas-Fort Worth Hospital Council.
You've got a younger population that's not eligible for Medicare.
Aside from age and income, immigration status is another factor. Dallas County's public hospital, Parkland, provides charity care for undocumented people. JPS in Tarrant County does not. The think tank Texas 2036 is doing focus groups and surveys to learn why people go without insurance. The group's Charles Miller found immigration status was a reason people chose not to enroll.
There are concerns among many Hispanic families that if they sign up for one of these plans, if there is anyone in their family who is here undocumented, that might subject them to scrutiny.
And census data shows both Dallas and Harris counties having much higher percentages of foreign-born residents than Bear or Tarrant. But Miller said people often don't know they're eligible for very low-cost health insurance, even though they believe they have all the information. That's where local community groups and healthcare providers come in.
And if there are local groups who have been going out and really working to sign people up, that can make a difference.
Measuring the visibility and effectiveness of those groups, however, is hard to do. The pandemic-era public health emergency has expired. Now, people on Medicaid are required to reapply for the first time in years. That means hundreds of thousands of Texans could lose their health insurance, including over 50,000 in Tarrant and 55,000 in Dallas County. But Miller said people leaving the Medicaid rolls may get coverage elsewhere, and many of the uninsured, leaving Medicaid or not, can turn to the health care medicare.gov marketplace and take advantage of new and more generous subsidies. For KERA News, I'm Brett Jaspers.
As Texas gets hotter with climate change, water becomes more scarce and precious. It also makes it more expensive. Many people in North Texas will be seeing higher water bills soon. The North Texas Municipal Water District is expecting to raise costs to meet the growing demand. KERA's Caroline Love says population growth, climate change, and grassy lawns are among the culprits.
Rodney Thomas's lush green lawn in McKinney has lots of sounds. There are cicadas, birds, and even bees buzzing about his garden. One thing you won't hear is sprinklers. Thomas says he hasn't turned them on yet.
We've had quite a bit of rain this year.
But Thomas's garden is still blooming despite the record heat. He says that's because he grows native plants that are adapted to the local ecosystem. In North Texas, that's the Blackland Prairie. Thomas is the president of the Collin County chapter of the Native Plant Society of Texas. He says prairie plants have longer roots, which means they can survive droughts better than those from tropical regions like Bermuda grass. That's the grass his homeowners association requires. Suburban life is a drain on water resources. Professor Robert Mays from Texas State University says a third of Texans' water usage goes to watering turf. Then there's pools. Mays calls them giant evaporation pans. He says the suburban lifestyle is why the average person in places like Collin County use more water than someone in a big city.
Suburban areas tend to be more affluent than certainly parts of urban areas. And if you go to poorer parts of town, you don't see a whole lot of people irrigating their yards.
Lawns in Texas drink up even more water in the summer heat. Mace says it's double what people use in the winter. And thanks to climate change, summer in Texas is getting hotter and longer. There's also more people with yards to water in Collin County than years past. The county's population hit over 1 million in the most recent census. Mace says a growing population coupled with climate change puts a strain on water providers, and that drives up costs for consumers.
The more water we need, the more water we need. And so we're going to have to spend more to get that water.
People who want to lower their bills and conserve water can plant native plants like Thomas or do something called xeriscaping. It's a lawn without any grass. That's what Marianne Landfear did to her lawn in Richardson. She recently went to an event at a brewery with the local Democratic Party to learn what the city is doing to conserve water.
I have decomposed granite. I have cactus gardens kind of spread throughout the front yard. And in the spring, it's solid bluebonnets.
Richardson City Council member Ken Hutchenrider spoke at the meeting about how people can use less water. Richardson is one of the member cities of the North Texas Municipal Water District. That means the district sells the water to the city, which then sells the water to its citizens. Most city water rates are at or close to the same rate as what the city pays. Hutchenrider says Richardson City Council prioritizes low water rates.
We are pushing as hard as we can to try and get those water rates down.
The water district is scheduled to vote on the new rate in late September. It'll go into effect October 1st. The projected increase isn't much. It's only 30 cents more. And Thomas says most people don't want to give up their lawns.
The American dream is to have a house with a nice yard around it and, you know, picket fence around it with kids playing out there and the dog and cat running around. But it's not a reasonable in this day and age. I don't think it's something that we can continue to do.
Temperatures are getting hotter. Whether or not that dream will last through the rising heat remains to be seen. I'm Caroline Love in McKinney.
That's it for this edition of Texas Matters. Thanks for listening. I'm David Martin Davies. You can email us at texasmatters@tpr.org. There are past episodes of Texas Matters on our website at tpr.org. And you can find us wherever you download cool podcasts. And tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio.
Support for TPR comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' comp provider committed to helping employers get their people home safely. Preventing workplace accidents protects families and keeps businesses productive. More at texasmutual.com.